Hi, this is Barry Listed, Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science of Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. More and more women are reaching leadership levels in corporations and business. Does gender matter when it comes to the appointment of women to corporate boards? Our guests today are Dr. Renee Adams of the University of New South Wales and Dr. Patricia Funk of Universitat Pompeu Fabra and Barcelona Graduate School of Economics. They've written a study, Beyond the Glass Ceiling, Does Gender Matter?, that appears in the current issue of the Informs Journal of Management Science. Professor Adams, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thanks very much.
Professor Funk, welcome.
Hi, Barry.
Let's begin just with the basics. What exactly is a glass ceiling, and how do women in business stand in relation to the glass ceiling today? Professor Adams, why don't we start with you?
The commonly held view is that the glass ceiling is a barrier that prevents women from reaching sort of the top executive levels. And this can be both in terms of positions and also in terms of pay. And so there's been some evidence or a substantial body of work arguing that women are relatively underpaid for the same position than men. And also there's a lot of evidence that women are not represented in the top executive positions in corporations.
Dr. Funk, did you want to add anything to that?
Well, maybe to your other question, how women in business stand in relation to the glass ceiling. I mean, I guess for many women it is probably frustrating to see how many women make it to the top. And, you know, one reason could be that it is the companies who really, or the people at the top level who do not want certain types of women to proceed. But on the other hand, it could also be just a natural consequence of women struggling to bring, like, family and work all together. So I guess, yeah, it is a shame that so many highly educated women do not find their way to the top. And, you know, maybe more institutional support in the future will change that.
Harriet Harman of the UK's Labour Party once blamed the worldwide economic crisis on male domination of banks, which raises a question whether diversity matters both in banks and at the corporate level. Does it?
So I would say for sure it does. There's been an increasing number of studies that document that diversity has not only a relationship to corporate outcomes, but also causal relationships. So a lot of evidence exists that argues that better performing firms have more women on the board. And so this is like some of the catalyst studies, for example. But recently there's been a lot of literature showing that women seem to, like, the more diversity you have on your board, the more, for example, monitoring can occur by the board. There's also some evidence that the more diversity you have, the better outcomes there are for stakeholders, for example, employees. So I would say that diversity does matter.
And are we seeing a trend, even though there's a glass ceiling, are we seeing a trend to appoint more women to boards and corporate leadership roles?
Oh, yeah, there is definitely a trend for more women getting appointed. I mean, first of all, more women are getting educated, and as a consequence of that, they enter more and more into the top level of companies. But recently also, Norway, for instance, they have enacted laws that basically prescribe firms by law to put a certain share, 40% in that case, of women on the board. So either through kind of natural evolutions in terms of women getting better educated, but also in terms of laws, it is to be expected that more women find their way to the top.
And Dr. Adams, you touched on this, but perhaps Dr. Funk would like to add, what are the benefits to a corporation of its board adding diversity, particularly when it comes to gender diversity?
I mean, as our study shows, women, even at the top of companies, have very different values from men. Therefore, they they value different things. They plausibly also think in a different way, and that may, you know, add new ideas and also affect the way decisions are made.
You write that that you had an expectation that one might expect gender differences to disappear once a woman goes up above the glass ceiling. Why would you have that supposition?
I think a lot of people believe that, you know, in order to be promoted to an executive position, that women have to be like men in their behavior. Another possibility is that, you know, if women are in a male-dominated environment, they might change so that they act, they start acting more, more male than, you know, trying to de-emphasize their femininity in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so those arguments would suggest that, you know, if you look at men and women in executive positions, maybe they're not actually that different in their behavior or in their, you know, fundamental attributes.
Although you do contrast aspiring women executives in general with women who benefit from from women who are in a different class of businesswomen, those who make either femininity part of their business or are, I guess, selling to other women. Do you want to say something about, say, a former model, Kathy Ireland, who was on the cover of Forbes, or somebody like Avon's chair, Andrea Jung, or Martha Stewart? Their forte is that they're selling to other women. How do they contrast with someone like a Meg Whitman, for example?
Well, I mean, it is to be expected that, you know, in different markets, different types of women may get to the top. I mean, in a market that is particularly targeted at female customers, you know, maybe it is an advantage having a woman on the top who is feminine. But more generally, there's no reason to believe that, or in other industries, that, you know, female or feminist or how do you say that, like women who are particularly feminine may have it easier to get to the top. So in that light, I think it's reassuring that our studies, a study that covers a whole range of industry, still finds that in average, women at the top are different in terms of values than men.
And let's go to some of the core points of your study. It compares women in corporate leadership with two different groups. One group it compares it to is their male counterparts, and the second group are women in the general population. What were you trying to learn from this approach? Dr. Adams?
Well, I think, I guess in some sense, we were a bit annoyed how people were essentially generalizing from studies that have been done on women in, like, sort of in the general population to women in executive roles. So there's a lot of experimental evidence, for example, documenting that women are more risk-averse than men. But a lot of the samples that they looked at were essentially, like, students or high school students, you know, not very, you know, in terms of positions, not very far advanced. And we thought...
I noticed that professors have a tendency to survey their own students.
That's right, exactly. And so we felt that, well, maybe the students are not necessarily going to tell us much about people who have actually worked their way up the corporate ladder. And so... So we thought, well, you know, the main question that we wanted to ask was, well, you know, does a glass ceiling make differences between men and women disappear or not? And then also we wanted to say, well, is it true that we can generalize from these studies about students, essentially, to women in the executive positions? And basically that's why we thought that doing this comparison first between men and women in executive positions and women in executive positions and women in the population is so important.
Of course, you can't survey people in every country when you're doing a study like this, and you decided to do a survey in Sweden. How do patterns among women in Swedish corporations compare with patterns in the U.S. and other countries? I guess what I'm asking is, why did you choose Sweden as a representative sample?
I mean, swimming is particularly useful because they're a big enough share of women at the top to conduct a meaningful study. So, but of course, we are also a bit worried that, I mean, are the results that we learn from Sweden generalizable to other countries? So what we did, we compared the gender gap in individual director characteristics for Sweden and the U.S., and for instance, we found that the difference between male and female directors in terms of age, education, and experience is very similar. So it doesn't seem to be the case that totally different types of directors get to the top compared to the U.S. There is, though, one difference, and that concerns marital status. So if we compare female directors in Sweden with the U.S., we find that the female directors are more likely to be married and have kids. And we think that is probably a consequence of Sweden being one of the most gender-equal societies in the world and providing a lot of institutional support for working mothers, for instance.
Right, whereas in the United States there's almost an assumption that a woman who wants to be successful has to put a hold on child rearing.
Exactly, exactly.
And can I just add there that precisely because Sweden is so gender equal, we think actually that the results that we find are potentially going to be even larger in other countries. Because other countries will have less institutional support, and therefore the differences between men and women might actually be larger than the ones that we find.
So tell us in brief how you conducted the study, who you surveyed, how you segmented. I won't ask you to go on at length, but give our listeners an idea.
Okay, so so basically what we did is we surveyed the entire population of directors in Sweden. This is another reason why Sweden is a useful country to look at, because you can actually get data on the entire population of directors, whereas if you said, look, I want to survey the entire population of directors in the U.S., that would be nearly impossible. So we surveyed the entire population of directors in Sweden, and we sent them a survey, which is a very standard survey in the literature on values. It's called the Schwartz Portrait Value Questionnaire. And it uses 40 questions to try and back out how individuals' human values basically, or how individuals emphasize certain values. And there's 10 different values. And then basically we matched the survey data to data on the exact same values that is available from the European Social Survey. And this is the data in the population, essentially. So we have a sample of director values, and we have a sample of population values. And then the things that we do are quite simple in some sense. So we compare the values of female directors to male directors. We compare the values of female directors to females or women in the population. And then we do a variety of robustness checks. We control for individual characteristics. And then we do some analysis where we try and say, well, how do our results generalize outside of Sweden? So we compare differences in values in the population for Sweden to those in other countries, and also differences in characteristics for directors in Sweden to differences in characteristics for directors outside of Sweden. And yeah, and that's basically the study.
Let me remind our listeners that this is a Science of Better with Barry list of informs. Our guests today are Renee Adams and Patricia Funk, who wrote a study about the glass ceiling. So we've got our methodology down. Tell us, what are the generally held assumptions of women's values when it comes to business, and how do corporate women compare to women in the general population?
I mean, because there was not much known about, you know, women's values in business, the usual assumption was always just to extrapolate from what we knew about values for the population sampled at large, you know, to the upper levels of companies. But that can be wrong, as our study shows. For instance,
so what did your study show about women's values in the general population?
For instance, like in the general population, women are usually more risk averse than men. they care more about security, they are more traditional, and they are more conformist. However, in our study, we find that along this dimension at the top, everything is reversed. Compared to the men, women are actually more risk-loving, they are, have a lower taste or need for security, and they are less traditional and with a lower degree of conformism, but on the other hand, they have a higher need for stimulation. So it's not always correct just to extrapolate from knowledge of the population at large to the upper level of the companies.
Do you have any sense of why that difference is reversed among corporate women?
Well, we believe, like, we don't have a definite answer, but so we think that one possible explanation is that, you know, it's not easy for women to get to the top in some sense because, you know, you have family obligations, and, you know, it's not the typical sort of career path for a woman to actually choose a career that leads to an executive position. So in order, like, there might be some self-selection going on here. So the women who actually choose these positions or choose to pursue a career that leads to these positions might have to be less sort of typical, one might say, than the average woman in the population in order to actually reach these positions. So you have to be have very little need for security, you have to be very untraditional in some sense, you have to be very nonconformist in order to actually reach these positions at the executive level.
Is there anyone in the business world today who's you're acquainted with who might be an example of the kind of corporate woman that you found in your survey?
It's a tricky question. I mean, like the difficulty for us is that we're measuring sort of like human values, so we couldn't necessarily say that that women in the corporate world have the same human values as in our study, but I would say a lot of women who are in executive positions nowadays are going to exemplify the values that we document. I would say a lot of people, if you're a woman at the top, you're going to be nonconformist, not very traditional, and probably with a low need for security. So I think, you know, I mean, if we think of the example you brought up earlier, Meg Whitman at HP, she's probably someone who would fit the sort of, you know, average executive profile that we document for women.
One surprise in your findings was that women on boards are more willing to take risks. This differs from commonly held beliefs about women and risk-taking. What did you find, and what do you think the implications are from this result?
Well, it is exactly what you say. I mean, in contrast to common wisdom or, like, studies for population sample at large, female directors are not more risk-averse than male directors. So, you know, the implication is that it is not necessarily the case that having more women on the board leads to more precautious or more risk-averse decision-making.
Can I also just add there, because you mentioned Harriet Harman earlier, who said that the financial crisis wouldn't have happened if banks had had more women on the board. So I think our finding is pretty interesting if you think about that comment, because I would imagine that one reason she said that is because she thought, well, women are more risk-averse. They wouldn't have taken a lot of the risks at the banks that led to the financial crisis. But in fact, we show that this assumption is potentially wrong, because if women are not more risk-averse, then it's not clear that having more women on bank boards would have prevented the financial crisis.
So do you think that women in business at the corporate level add creativity or add different perspectives?
Yeah, I mean, we show that women at the top level have a high taste for stimulation. It is reasonable to assume that, you know, people who care a lot about stimulation, they may have new ideas, plus the fact that, you know, women value different things is to be expected to lead to new ideas being brought into the whole process of arguing.
And should this be reassuring to corporations that might be concerned about losing a competitive spirit if they add more women to their boards?
I would say definitely, because, you know, if corporations say, oh, look, we're going to hire a woman to our board, and the picture that they have in mind of the typical woman is the picture that you have from these surveys of students where they say, oh, she's going to be risk-averse, she's going to be, you know, very traditional, she's not going to be very, you know, sort of have a high need for stimulation or whatever, then, you know, I would agree that probably most corporations would think that's not such a good thing. But if we say, look, actually the women who are at the level where they could be hired to a corporate board position are very different from the typical sort of picture of women that we have in mind, then I think they should be reassured. And I also think that our evidence that women are actually quite different from men at that level is also good, because it suggests that women are going to bring a different perspective to the table.
And what do you think is the most important finding, the most important result from your research?
I think, the result on risk-taking is interesting. Also, this surprising result that women are not very traditional, they're not security-oriented. But another interesting finding is that we find that even at the director level, women are more benevolent, or they care more about the others than men, and at the expense of being less power-oriented. This is another perspective where women clearly, or another dimension where women clearly differ from men.
And final question, where do you go next with this research on gender differences at the corporate level?
Well, I think our study opens up a lot of areas to explore. So I guess some work that we're doing right now, actually I'm doing some work on precisely the issue related to the financial crisis, looking at whether one can say that having more women on the board would have led banks to take less risk. So our study sort of is a stepping point for looking at such issues, because we show that while women don't seem to be more risk averse in director positions, so what does that imply for banks during the financial crisis?
There are certainly a couple heroes, at least to those who are more progressive in the United States, among women, I think both in the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, who challenged certain important assumptions. Brooksley Bourne during the Clinton administration comes to mind. I think that plays in a little bit with what you're saying.
Right, that's right.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Dr. Renee Adams of the University of New South Wales and Dr. Patricia Funk of Universitas Pompeu Fabra and Barcelona Graduate School of Economics. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.